Haydn Symphony No. 3, Adam Fischer led the Austro-Hungarian Haydn Orchestra.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and you're listening to WHFR out of Henry Ford Community College. We thank you for choosing WHFR as your classical connection. If you would like to learn more about what's happening in and around WHFR, programming changes, where we might be doing appearances, and so on and so forth, then we'd love you to be a part of our WHFR Loyal Listener mailing list. It is a free opportunity for you to receive right to your doorstep the WHFR Loyal Listener. It is our bi-monthly newsletter that shares all of the latest happenings of WHFR, both out and about in town or programming changes, music reviews, and so much more. And best of all, it's free. Simply give us a call, 313-845-9842. Leave your name, full address, and phone number, and I will put you on the WHFR mailing list just like that.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn, non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And we have a very special show today in that our guest is a world-renowned author, hypnotist, and expert on the alien abduction phenomenon, Mr. Bud Hopkins. Mr. Hopkins resides in New York City and is an artist and sculptor of note. And his fascination with the UFO phenomenon began with his own personal UFO sighting in 1964. Today, he's considered the leading authority on the subject with hundreds of cases that he has personally investigated at length. He has been interviewed countless times on radio and television to include the ABC special Peter Jennings' Seeing is Believing. He's the author of Missing Time, Intruders, Witnessed, and Sight Unseen. And we are honored to have him with us today, Mr. Bud Hopkins. Hello, Mr. Hopkins.
Well, hello, Dave, and very glad to be with you.
Well, it is our pleasure indeed. And we're going to get to discussing your personal sighting and your books and your work. You're a certified hypnotist, correct?
Well, I've never gone through the process of certification. What
okay.
I did was I spent 7 years bringing people to a psychiatrist and psychologist and mm-hmm. even a police hypnotist to do the hypnosis.
Okay.
So I had a 7-year apprenticeship, the world's longest. And then I had these same psychiatrist psychologists sit in my session. So mm-hmm. it was a learning process that took 7 years.
Okay. But you have been successful with this hypnosis.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hypnosis is can be extremely effective when it's done properly.
When it's done properly. So you've had a lot of real-life experts watching and teaching you, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I've taken hypnosis classes myself. I know as long as you're careful and you do it properly, you're very successful.
What's interesting about it, Dave, to me, is that to... relax a person who was willing to be relaxed and get them into a very relaxed, deep trance state is not a big problem. Mm-hmm. The problem is how to conduct the interview and the questions and the how you work with a person verbally through this whole process. Mm-hmm. And without leading the person, and with a lot of built-in ways of discerning whether the person is confabulating or telling the truth or what. And, of course, there's a huge aspect of a sort of de facto therapy built into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to get back to that hypnosis business in your books. But there was a very important press conference held at the prestigious National Press Club in Washington, D.C. on November the 12th, 2007. And Mr. Hopkins was in attendance. Is that correct?
Yes, and it was quite the most remarkable conference on the UFO subject that I have ever been to. And I've been to many, many, many in many different countries. But this was really quite exceptional.
Okay. I understand that, well, I know that Fife Symington, who is the former governor of Arizona, was mm-hmm. there. And he was the governor during the the Phoenix Lights incident, and he made fun of all of this press about the lights and the triangular shaped objects. And of course, he wasn't voted back in again. There were about like 10,000 people who saw it, and they took offense to that, didn't they?
Yes. Well, at the time, the point. When that happened, there was no statement coming from the governor or from the Air Force or anybody as to what this thing was. Mm-hmm. And here you had thousands of people demanding some kind of answers. What is this big thing that was flying over from northern Arizona down across Phoenix? And there became a demand for investigations and so forth. Mm-hmm. And that's when, sometime later, actually, a couple of months after the incident, that Symington decided to cool things down. It was a terrible decision, I have to say. He probably would admit it now. Mm-hmm. By somehow making light of it, and he dressed his assistant up in Martian outfit, as he put it, at the conference, and brought him out and said he was the one. This was what was behind this at a press conference, and then the man took the. His mask off and so forth, and everyone laughed. And, of course, this was, as I say, several months after the incident. So the right. people who were still expecting some kind of government investigation or some kind of investigation from the governor's office were extremely upset, outraged about this.
Yes. But then 10 years later, after he was no longer the governor, he admitted that he had seen something also.
Absolutely, yes. He described. Now, one of the interesting things about this conference, which incidentally was organized by two people, James Fox, a filmmaker, and Leslie Kane, a journalist, but they used Fife Symington as the moderator of this panel of 14 mm-hmm. different important government and scientific and military people from different countries who had either had sightings of themselves or had been involved in the investigation of them.
Now these were pilots.
And Symington was actually the the central figure in a certain sense because he was the moderator.
Mm-hmm. And there were pilots who have had dogfights with UFOs. There were there was a guy from the I can't remember his name now. I played a testimony by him from the FAA.
Yes, John Callahan.
John Callahan, that's the one.
And just to give you an outline here of the people who were there, there were two generals, one from the Belgian Air Force, retired, who was the one who had done the investigation of the huge flying triangle over Belgium, mm-hmm. General De Brouwer, who was quite an impressive figure. Right. And there was General Jafari, who is a general retired from the Iranian Air Force, who had been a major at the time of this incident over Tehran in 1976, and he was one of the pilots who intercepted the UFO. And this was seen, of course, on radar and from the ground, and it was, for him, quite a terrifying experience.
Well, let me do this. I'm going to play a clip that it's a 4.5-minute clip, and it has six brief statements from the people from this National Press Club conference, and then you can, and then we'll have you elaborate on this a little
bit. Okay, very good.
Okay, so the following begins with Fife Symington, who was the he led the show, and other pilots. There are six different people. So let's listen to this, and then we'll get back to Mr. Hopkins.
I'm Fife Symington. In 1997, during my second term as governor of Arizona, I saw something that defied logic and challenged my reality. I witnessed a massive delta-shaped craft that silently navigated over the Squaw Peak area in North Phoenix in the evening, and it was truly breathtaking. To my astonishment, it appeared to be a solid structure. It was huge. It had a very distinctive leading edge with embedded, huge embedded lights in it. And it was just traveling quietly, made no sound, through the Arizona night sky. I still don't know what it was. As a pilot and a former Air Force officer, I can definitively say that this craft did not resemble any man-made object that I'd ever seen. And it was certainly not high-altitude flares as put out by the Air Force at Luke Air Force Base, because I've never seen flares fly in formation. The incident was witnessed by hundreds, if not thousands, of people in Maricopa County and in southern Arizona. I was never happy with this silly explanation. There might very well have been military flares in the sky that evening, but that sure wasn't what I and what hundreds of my fellow citizens saw.
When the pilot first reported the UFO, he described it as a huge ball with lights running around it. He said it was about four times bigger than the 747 he was riding. And remember, the 747 has an elevator. And he's looking out the window and he sees something that's four times the size of his aircraft. He said he saw it with his eyes, his lying eyes, he saw it. The co-pilot with him saw it, and the other crew member all saw it visibly.
Both objects were of a flattened disc shape with a dark area to the right. They were brilliant yellow with light emanating from within, and I estimated them to be up to possibly a mile across. I found myself astounded but curious, but at 12 miles distant, these objects were becoming uncomfortably large, and I was glad to descend and land the aircraft.
During Air Force Flight 3532 from Nice to London on 28th January 1994, I observed with my crew a UFO in broad daylight near Paris. This UFO was in evolution, and it looked like this, with a bank angle of 45 degrees. It seemed to be a huge flying disc. It stabilized and stopped moving.
In a small area in eastern Belgium, approximately 140 UFO sightings were reported. Hundreds of people saw a majestic triangular craft with a span of approximately 120 feet. Powerful beaming spotlights moving very slowly without making any significant noise, but in several cases accelerating to very high speeds.
The witnesses then observed a landed spherical 3 meters diameter UFO at a distance of 80 yards with four occupants near it. Very high luminosity was reported after slow takeoff, leaving physiological effects on the witnesses' eyes that were confirmed by the village mayor. The hiss noise described by the two witnesses was also heard by the hunting guard of the village. The UFO acceleration after vertical takeoff was estimated to be about 100 G's, by Japan experts. The occupants were seen floating in the air while entering the craft from its top, at first in a hurry, like this.
So those were testimonies by six different eyewitnesses, military, government, the ex-governor of Arizona, as well as a FAA official. Can you elaborate on any of these?
Well, the FAA official, John Callahan, was the FAA the officer in charge of investigating accidents and near misses in the air.
Okay.
And he studied all of the radio transmissions that the Japanese pilots were making as they were reporting this object, and compared them with the radar reports which were received, and found that, of course, whatever the pilots were saying, we can see it now, you know, 10 degrees to the starboard or something, the thing would have been reported on radar at that point. So it was he was a very, very thorough investigator who had no prior interest in UFOs, but at this point he was taken into a meeting. This happened during Reagan's presidency. He was taken into a meeting with much of the radar material and voice material that he had collected in his official role, even though he'd made copies of some of it. But they, when he went in there, it was all taken from him. And Reagan's science advisor was there, and a couple of CIA men, and he testified, Callahan, that the CIA men said to him, identifying themselves as CIA, that this never happened, and it was not to be talked about, and, you know, in a sense, uttered a rather subtle threat. And he said that as he left, he said to one of these CIA men, well, what was this thing? And the man said, well, it was, of course, a UFO.
It was a UFO?
But
This was admitted by the CIA, right?
Yeah. It was admitted by this one officer. Of course, we don't have the officer's name and testimony.
Right.
But
it's like, yeah, these things exist, and I've told you that, and I'll prove it, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, but the the other people, the English pilot who was described to me as a mile wide thing, which he had also had his some members of the crew and his people in another plane and his co-pilot had seen. This only happened a few months ago, and I have to say he still is shaken by the experience. What was important about this is that all of these people came from countries other than the United States.
Right.
Callahan was actually, together with the two witnesses from the Bentwaters incident, the only Americans there. There were only three. People from Peru and Chile and, of course, France. And it was just quite an amazing event. And I think the interesting thing, David, to really go into, to just mention and underline, is that the coverage that followed this has been extraordinarily objective, even though there have been little attempts at sort of little jokey interpretation, interpolations of just certain words. But essentially, it's been extremely serious coverage, and there have been articles appear on this conference in Pravda and in Russia and in Melbourne, Australia, and in Dubai, and in most of the cities of France and England and so forth. It's really quite amazing.
Well, France, as the scientists and Air Force personnel of France, have come up with what is called the Cometa Report or Cometa Report, and they have pretty much admitted to their citizens that UFOs are real. They're probably extraterrestrial in origin, and deserves a scientific, serious scientific study. And also from Mexico, from I believe Colombia, Belgium. You know, there are all these countries that have admitted to their people, and yet U.S. remains silent. Why do you think that is?
Well, I'm not sure exactly, but the thing about the Cometa report is, first of all, that was brought to light here in the United States by one of the conference organizers, Leslie Kane, who wrote a big article on it for the Boston Globe. And the Cometa report was put together by retired French officers and generals, police people, admirals, and so forth, one of whom was the retired former equivalent of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It would have been as if Colin Powell had signed something like this. It was quite an amazing thing. And one of the scientists who spoke was a member of the Cometa Committee.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Hmm. But in the United States, we're not sure why, except the other countries are not making an announcement in the sense that this is real and that there's an extraterrestrial threat. They're not saying that. They're saying that we don't know what this is. This is something we're investigating.
Hmm.
And, of course...
But they're giving it a serious investigation.
They're giving it... That's the main point.
Yeah.
The conference organizers wanted to focus on the idea of the government... beginning a serious investigation into the subject, as these other countries have done.
Yeah. I'm going to have to take a break right now, but we're going to get back to this very fascinating and important subject of this conference. I need to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're speaking with Mr. Bud Hopkins, and we're going to continue with this, so please don't go away.
Some dreams are universal. Dreams that inspire us. Multiple sclerosis is a devastating disease that changes lives forever. The National MS Society does more for people with MS than any organization in the world. This is why we're here. Because nobody dreams of having multiple sclerosis. Call 1-800-FIGHT-MS.
Hungry? The Skylight Cafe is convenient and offers a variety of food options to hungry students and staff.
Pizza, daily specials, sandwiches, and entrees.
How about ordering something hot off the grill?
Or if you just want a snack.
The Skylight Cafe has cookies, desserts, chips, fresh fruit, and a wide variety of beverages.
There's even a soup and salad bar. Ours are
Monday through Thursday, 7:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. and
Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 2 p.m.
The Skylight Cafe.
That's right, make sure your radio dial is set to 89.3 FM every Monday afternoon from 2 to 4 for Big Band with Dan, only on WHFR.FM, this station that's making waves.
This is the station making waves, WHFR.FM. And we're back with Bud Hopkins on We Are Not Alone. And tell me, Mr. Hopkins, what do you feel?
Parenthetical remark.
Hold on.
Your announcement about the big band afternoon.
Okay.
One of the people who I had dealt with who was extremely, totally fascinated by the subject and had some odd experiences was the drummer Buddy Rich, who had one of the last famous big bands.
Okay.
He said, outside of music, the UFO subject is the most important thing in his life.
Buddy Rich said that.
Buddy Rich.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of people that have come forward in the entertainment business. And John Lennon is one of them that claims to have seen a UFO.
Absolutely, yeah.
Seeing is believing, though. And tell me what you your experience when you first, before you encountered your sighting, did you have any opinion of UFOs one way?
Well,
or
I didn't. If I can just take one more minute to discuss something that was not covered in the little bit that you played at the conference, and that was General Jafari of the Iranian Air Force describing his 1970 sixth encounter. And it was an early informal dinner that we were all sitting around, and he was at one end of the table. He's a very charming man. He was a major at the time of the incident. And the other end of the table was Oscar Comandante from the Peruvian Air Force, Oscar Santa Maria, who had actually fired his machine guns from his airplane at a UFO in an encounter. And I'm sitting there talking to these two men and listening to them. General Jafari would place a water glass on the table in front of him and say, well, the UFO was here, and then his hand would mimic his airplane approaching this thing, and how the thing would suddenly zoom away, and these two pilots are comparing notes, and I'm thinking, in the whole world, I can't imagine being present at a table with two people who have had dogfights, literally, with UFOs. It's quite remarkable.
Yes, indeed. And comparing notes, now that's... I'm not trying to change the subject here, but going back to the abduction phenomenon,
yes,
people used to believe, you know, the psychiatrist, psychologist would get these people in there, you know, I've had this this experience where I've been abducted by these beings, and I saw a UFO and all of this good stuff. All around the world, and of course they just wrote it out as schizophrenia or delusional or whatever. And it wasn't really until Betty and Barney Hill came out with their story of their abduction that the psychiatrists and psychologists started comparing notes from around the world and saying, you know what, this is happening all over the world.
Yeah, well, it actually didn't happen until sometime after the Betty and Barney Hill thing, and then it's come in a steady stream. And I've had so far 8 psychiatrists come to me about their own personal abduction experiences, and a number of psychologists and therapists who were abductees themselves.
Oh, I see.
So, I mean, it's
a... Have they
sought
treatment?
One of the interesting things, of course, is how glibly people can say, well, hallucination or something. Of course, it's always somebody like the late Carl Sagan, who was not a psychiatrist, that was not his field, who would bounce around words like hallucination and delusion and so forth. But the point is that when these people had been tested psychologically by very objective tests by people who didn't even know what the reports were that these people were making, they don't turn up to be at all mentally ill or anything.
Right.
So that whole theory has just kind of gone down the tubes.
Right.
We do run into mentally ill people, that's for sure, that's something you usually can pick up fairly fast.
Yeah, I think a psychiatrist, a psychologist could pick that up pretty fast, too.
Yep.
But, yeah, I remember there was a study done on that. It was a blind test where abductees went in, did not tell them that what they were there for, just wanted a psychological evaluation. And they came back clean. They were perfectly all right. But they all seemed to share one trait. They seem to be suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Yes.
And that was the fact, you know, something very traumatic had happened in their lives.
And in many of these cases, because I've had therapists refer some of their patients to me, I'm not a therapist, but at least I can help them get back at whatever the experience was that caused the trauma. So what happens is when they look into their experiences, the trauma that was the effects of which were there, but there was no particular cause. People have gone to psychiatrists for years trying to figure out what had happened to them, even though there was no sense of sexual abuse or incest or terrible accidents or deaths or the kinds of things that can cause PTSD. Once the UFO experiences come to light, the psychiatrists and therapists will all say, well, that's what did it.
That's what did it. What's what did it? The abduction?
The abduction, yep.
So the psychiatrists, psychologists have finally come to the conclusion, or some have come to the conclusion that I guess what they're saying must be the truth.
Yeah, that's happened in many cases. But, and I think just it's worth telling one example. A man who had been with a therapist for years with PTSD symptoms and so forth. And the man was an expert, the therapist, in PTSD. He had a lot of Vietnam vets in his practice and all that. And they couldn't locate any real trauma in his life. And ultimately, because he told a friend about a lot of odd experiences he'd had, the friend urged him to write to me. And so when I dealt with him, what he was telling me involved a huge UFO near his car, three other people in the car with him, and a period of missing time, which lasted maybe 5 hours. And he remembers being terrified after that, but they couldn't remember what actually happened during the 5 hours. None of the four of them could. And when it is hypnosis, and out came the experience, he was absolutely terrified, shocked, as he was reliving it. And I told him to go back, when he went back home, to call his therapist right away and make an appointment. And this man was really shattered. And he called the therapist, and when I called this individual to find out how it was going, I said, what happened when you told your therapist about this? And he said, well, he believed me. He believed that this is what caused my experience, my PTSD. And I said, oh, that's very good. And he said, no, it isn't. He said, I wanted him to tell me that there was a mental problem I had, something that could be fixed. This is not something that can be fixed. And he said, I cancel all my appointments with this man. I'll never see him again.
Oh,
so upset was he at the idea that what he had remembered was actually being confirmed as the probable cause by his therapist. Nobody likes to know to believe this, you know.
Yeah. I had a friend, a woman, who came back from the doctor's. She says, he told me I have a heart condition. I'm never going back to that guy again. And I thought, wait a minute. You know?
Yeah. Bob and Ray, the old radio comedians, had a wonderful thing that if you needed an expensive and serious operation but couldn't afford it, they found another hospital where you could go, and for a much smaller fee, they would simply retouch your x-rays.
Yes, indeed. That's one way to go about it.
I guess it is.
So did this guy go to other psychologists, one that would say, oh, it's all in your head?
Yeah.
Huh?
Well,
you don't know that?
The thing is that it's within the psychiatric community, really,
yeah,
that we've found the most solid support for our work.
Mm-hmm.
The group that you never find support are the astronomers.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're sitting there and telling you, based on theory, this can't be because you can't get here from there, wherever there is, and it wouldn't look like this, and they couldn't do that, and so on and so forth. In other words, a bundle of theories trying to refute our data.
I've noticed that the ones that will tell you that there's no such thing as aliens are going to tell you everything the aliens can do, everything the aliens can't do, everything all about the aliens. Well, wait a minute, didn't you just tell me they can't exist?
Right.
You know? No, well,
The one writer once said that he didn't believe, he had some rather mystical outlook, and he said he didn't believe that the UFO occupants were extraterrestrial in nature, because, he said, they're not doing what extraterrestrials would do.
Guess they know all about the extraterrestrials.
Oh, of course. So he went down to the Bureau of Standards in Washington and pulled one out of the drawer and checked it out.
Must have been. My gosh. So, just to touch back now before we go further with the abduction phenomenon, the credibility of these speakers. First of all, how many were there at the National Press Club?
And you mean how many speakers on the panel?
How many speakers on the panel?
14.
14.
And now this is a very important thing. They all signed, and together with a few other people who didn't attend, including a Russian general, they all signed a statement requesting that the United States government get in line with the other nations of the world and run an actual investigative study of the subject itself, because of its, as they pointed out, there are national security issues, there are air safety security issues, and of course there's the possibility of this being an enormous breakthrough for science. And they demanded Americans follow what their governments are doing.
But don't you believe that covertly, through black projects, or however you want to phrase it, our government is studying these things?
Oh, I don't have any doubt that that's going on. I don't think it's possible, knowing the extent of the phenomenon and the range of reports and the fact that so many come from the military, that they're not paying attention. Some branch within has to be doing it. I mean, it just seems to me inconceivable that it's not. And Don Donderry, a psychologist from Canada, wrote in a piece on scientific evidence versus military intelligence evidence versus courtroom evidence and so forth, he said military intelligence has to look into anything that seems to be a remote threat. See, a scientist, the Carl Sagans of the world, whatever, they don't have to bother. Sagan's thing was always, well, if you come in and bring me a cocktail napkin from an alien craft, I'll look at it. But in other words, they're saying, you have to supply some sort of evidence to me before I even think about it. But as Donderry pointed out, military intelligence doesn't work that way. If they hear rumors or reports of something, they have to look into it.
Right.
Because they're charged with defending the country and heading off any kind of attack.
Yeah, but isn't it, given the fact that there really is nothing our military or our Air Force can do to protect us, the citizens, from abduction, control our airspace from intrusion, isn't it much more convenient to just say, well, it doesn't exist in the first place, therefore we don't have to protect you from anything?
Well, I think the basic problem has always been the fear of panic in the country if any kind of announcement were made. And as I pointed out, a line which was used in the film version of my second book, Intruders, I said something about the economy is really based on the idea of a 30-year mortgage. The 30 years down the line, it's going to be the same country, the same environment, pretty much, as it is now. And I've always said that if any announcement was made, I've said this hundreds of times, and it was just simply announced, they're here, they can now fly anything we have, they're abducting our men, women, and children in a program of their complex agenda that they have. we're not in communication with them, we'll let you know. We don't know whether they're going to turn out to be friendly or not, we'll let you know when we hear more about it. Thank you and good night. And I always say, at that point, I would rather be in the liquor business than the stock market or the real estate market.
I hear you.
And so I think that I don't think any government can really make that kind of announcement an announcement of total impotence in the face of this.
Without
engendering all kinds of national and economic panic.
Right. There would be, even though you and I realize they can't do anything about it, there are people who are going to say, I demand you do something about this.
Yes, of course.
Especially abductees.
Yeah,
I demand you stop. Well, what are they going to do? They can't do anything. And while we're on the subject of intruders, there's a question I've been meaning to ask. And since I have you on the line here, I'm going to ask you. In Intruders, when the spacecraft first landed and they tracked it on radar, the colonel, general, whoever was investigating, used the term, we have a confirmed angel touchdown, meaning the UFO had landed. Is this a real term that is used, or is this made up?
No, that was part of the fictionalized thing.
Okay.
See, what you have to realize is that Tracy Torme, incidentally the son of Mel Torme, who was a big friend of Buddy Rich and also very interested in UFOs, but Tracy Torme had written the screenplay, and he changed the story that I had written, of course, radically, in that the main woman involved, Kathy Davis, as I called her, was turned into two women, two different roles.
Okay.
And the role of me, of the investigator, was turned into two different people, too. a psychologist and a sociologist.
Mm-hmm.
And so all kinds of things were added like mm-hmm. that. They were not in the book. And I had my problems. I was, of course, a consultant on the movie, but Dan Curtis, the director, was impossible to budge. And when you're a consultant, you object to something like the quote that you just mentioned, saying that that has nothing to do with the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the that aspect of it wasn't in the book. And Curtis and the other people say, well, that's very interesting, Mr. Hopkins. Thank you very much.
Why did they hire you as a consultant? You know,
God knows.
There are many times I'll look at movies and it's something to do with the Army or something that they just wouldn't do. And I says, they need a technical director on this.
There were all kinds of things like that
mm-hmm.
in the film. The thing I liked about the film, I gave it, the miniseries, I gave it a B+ in my scorebook. But at any rate, what I liked about it was that the emotions were of the various people were sort of accurately dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
People responded the way people really do respond in these circumstances.
Right.
That's both the abductees and members of their family who don't know how to handle it and who are completely confused and upset by what they're hearing from their own kith and kin, as the saying goes,
mm-hmm.
and also the way this impacts upon the investigators. All of that was very accurate. It's just that so many of the details were just changed, and it was a whole Roswell right. aspect dragged in by the nape of its neck.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen the movie and I've read the book, and I think they're both great in their own right.
Yes, that's what I agree. I have certain proprietary feelings about the book, and I had wished that
they paid more attention to him.
I have to say one thing that I wanted, how the note I wanted the film to end on. I wanted to have the general or the scientist or whatever who had been the skeptic
mm-hmm.
approach the investigator and say something like, I'm not saying that this is true, but hypothetically, if we do have the wreckage of UFOs and if we do know absolutely for certain this is going on, and if our studies have shown that if this were announced, there would be a national wave of at least economic chaos and panic.
Yeah.
If all of that were true, saying this now to the investigator, what would you have us do? And I thought that's the note you end the movie on.
Yeah, that's right, because that's pretty much what it is. What would you have us do? We're going to have to take a break right now,
mm-hmm.
and a non-commercial break, I might add. But remind our listeners that they're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I am David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with Bud Hopkins, and we will be right back after this.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? Would you feel scared or proud? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Would you rather make your own way or spend a lifetime saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
The performing arts are an important facet of life. There is no substitute for the relationship between audience and performer. Your contributions to the Henry Ford Community College Theater Program enable students and faculty to continue promoting HFCC's artistic standards. By becoming a member of the Friends of HFCC Theater, you are allowing the theater program to prosper through establishing a scholarship fund, improving costume and scene shop facilities, and enabling the continuation of musical theater productions. For more information on becoming a friend of HFCC Theater, call 313-845-6478.
Do you like your jazz soft, hard, free, swinging, or maybe a combination of these? If so, the Play It By Ear show is sure to satisfy your taste, regardless of style. Tune in every Tuesday in drive time, 5 to 7 p.m. with me, Terrence Tyson, the Jazz Monster Slayer, only on WHFR.FM 89.3, the station making waves.
Welcome back to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with Mr. Bud Hopkins. We were talking about the abduction phenomenon. Now, you've worked with several people, hundreds of people, who claim to have been abducted by aliens, otherworldly beings, other dimensional beings. And has any one of them ever taken a lie detector test, a polygraph test?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do they
fare? It's not common, partly because... first of all, it's very expensive, and all you're testing is whether the person believes it's true.
Right.
And I don't think, in the whole range of all the work that I've done, and colleagues Dave Jacobs and John Mack and John Carpenter and others over the years, I don't think anybody thinks that liars are a very common phenomenon in this.
No.
Where you get fakes and lies and so forth, really, are in faked crop circle formations and so forth, and also faked UFO photographs.
Right, but both
the person
of those...
who does that can fake it and then let it send it, alert the newspapers or something, and then sit back and be very smug with his or her buddies about how they put one over. Mm-hmm. But to deal with somebody on a one-on-one basis for maybe many days, and to maintain a lie, there's no real payoff. We don't run into that. So lie detection isn't really anything that's going to be very helpful. Mm-hmm. The thing that is really more to the point is, of course, the fact that there are people who are mentally ill who think that these things happen, and that's not at all uncommon.
Right. But have some of the, or a lot of your, the people that you've worked with, say from intruders or from witness, have they undergone psychiatric examinations?
Well, there's again the problem of we don't have any money to pay for psychological testing, although we have done testing in a number of cases. And one of the early tests that we did involved... a psychologist, Dr. Slater, who was not told anything about the people we want to test it. We just said this is a group, and we're interested in two things, any signs of mental illness and psychopathology, and any patterns. And so she tested all these people and gave everybody, high marks on their mental health. But they all had certain residual emotional problems that were not anything that we would call an illness. They, for instance, they had a lot of trouble trusting their own physicality and sexuality and so forth, a certain dissociative element. They had a lot of trouble with relationships and trust, and they also suffered from generally low self-esteem, which she later explained when we told her what this was about, are three of the exact problems that would result if they had had these experiences. Right. But there was no mental illness. But I would say that over the years there have been, undoubtedly several hundred people have been tested. And mental illness is not one of the things that turns up in the people that we work with because we're... I think generally savvy enough to spot that going in, and so we don't work with these people.
Right. Yeah, and I think that so many people, millions of people over the years, have claimed these abduction experiences, and they represent such a, those who come forward with them represent a very small percentage of those actually abducted because they're afraid to come forward.
You see, one of the problems, Dave, it's not right to say they claim abduction experiences because most of them don't claim it. The general letter that I get or email or whatnot is Very apologetic. I may be wasting your time. Maybe there's nothing to this, but when I was five, I had this and that, and I had such and such happen, and I don't know what it means, and there's probably nothing to it, and that kind of thing. Backing and filling, but certainly aware that that something has bothered them all their lives, and they don't like to say, I'm claiming an abduction.
Right, right. As an investigator for MUFON, you know, I've got to learn, well, you're with MUFON too, but I have to learn to say, and I have to say, you know, this alleged incident happened, alleged.
Yeah, well.
And here's the evidence, so you decide how alleged it is. You know?
Right. Well, what I tend to say to everybody that I work with is, that I can't say whether this happened to you or it didn't happen to you. That all I can say is, in such and such a case, is that everything you're telling me is part of the pattern that I have run into hundreds and hundreds of times with people who have had abduction experiences. Right.
And then there are cases like in your book, Witnessed, where you know, people say, well, if these flying saucers, these UFOs come over big cities like New York and abduct people, other people should see it. And then comes the book Witnessed.
Yeah.
Excellent book, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
And tell us just briefly about, we're running out of time, but a five-minute synopsis of the book Witnessed.
Well, a synopsis is more or less impossible because it's the most complicated case I've ever been involved with. But essentially, for once, the UFO occupants decided to make a display of an abduction. And that display was aimed at a motorcade of important political and diplomatic figures, three in the morning, who were driving down the east side. This was at the time of the Berlin Wall coming down and great international tension. And apparently they stopped this motorcade by interfering with the electrical systems, and at that point turned on all the lights on the UFO above a building and floated a woman out the 12-story window with three alien figures, two below her and one above her, under bright lights with numbers of witnesses, although this took place very quickly, and they were lifted up into the UFO, which then went into the over the FDR Drive and into the East River. It's a very complicated thing, but this does show that if these things were happening in a way that they could be seen, we would have, you know, all kinds of witnesses all the time. But essentially, what I was dealing with in Sight Unseen, my second book, fourth book, is that they seem to have a way of carrying this thing out invisibly.
Right.
We don't know how any of that is done. But in this one case, they wanted to make a display, and they did.
Yeah, I think they have. I've read Sight Unseen also, and I was just amazed. Some of the things that have been reported are even more amazing than the acrobats they do, maneuverability of the craft. However, we're finding that earthly science is finding ways for invisibility technologies and through energies. And some of the things that you cited in the book are just amazing.
Well, I think that's a tremendously important point, that any kind of advanced technology always looks like magic,
right,
you know.
Right.
And then as it becomes real technology, obviously, for instance, if Leonardo da Vinci had seen closed-circuit television, he would have thought the devils were around or something.
Right.
But the point is that every advanced technology seems magical until we figure out how it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just technology. It's nothing that's so magical. And apparently our science in so many different areas is beginning to approach some of the technology that the aliens have been capable of for maybe a billion years or something. We don't have any idea. Clearly, abductions happen in New York City all the time, and they're not seen. I've had abductions. I've worked with people who were abducted in Chicago and Los Angeles and Paris and Rome and London and Tokyo and you name it. And apparently nobody ever saw the thing take place. There's lots of reasons to defend the fact that these are real abductions, which I can't go into. But the point is that the phenomenon can be hidden somehow. Mm. And in this one case in Witness, they decided to turn on all the lights. And interestingly, several of the witnesses who were looking at this thought, a movie is being made. This is some kind of special effects thing. This is Spielberg. It looks so real, it looked fake.
Mm-hmm. And there were people on the bridge, Brooklyn Bridge,
yep.
that were where their cars all stalled at the same time.
Yes.
Of course, guys like McGahee, James McGahee, the astronomer.
Yeah, well, he's a very important and brilliant person, you can tell by the way he... I thought it was very interesting
that
on one of the programs he talked about one of the witnesses who was really extremely moving to hear, mm-hmm. Sergeant Jim Peniston, who was at he was at this press conference in Washington, but he mm-hmm. was at Rendlesham during that whole business. And he and two men were in the woods, security team, and came upon the UFO, landed on the ground, and Peniston actually touched the thing.
Right.
So it's an incredible story, which he told at the conference. But that particular witness you just mentioned, whose name will not escape my lips, said, I don't believe he ever touched the thing. In other words, this man is lying. Mm-hmm. That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
And he's lying simply because this man's belief system, debunker's belief system is so powerful that he cannot admit the possibility that this man might be telling the truth and that he did touch the thing.
Yeah.
They're the true believers, these debunkers. The true believers know in advance, no matter what you say, that this can't happen simply because these things can't exist.
Right.
And they believe it as strongly as the Pope believes in the virgin birth.
And they go into their quote-unquote investigation, which they never do an investigation.
No, never do an investigation.
But they just listen to your data, the evidence, and twist it and say, they hand you some explanation that doesn't fit the evidence, which I always think.
All the time.
And I love to see these debunkers on a debate about the UFO phenomenon, because it was amazing. They had a poll on Larry King when they debated, and the man who shall remain nameless spoke and gave his debunking excuses. And they had a poll you can go to on the web, and do you believe in the UFOs or not? And before this guy spoke, the debunker spoke, there was 77% said yes. And after the debunker spoke, it was 83% yes. You know, in other words, I don't believe in him very much, but when he gives these excuses, maybe they got something there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So just amazing. Yeah. And briefly now, your IF stands for?
Mm-hmm. The Intruders Foundation. I just like the acronym IF.
All right. So, and people can get in touch with you by...
We have just intrudersfoundation.org. Very easy to get to our website. Mm-hmm. And we have a seminar coming up. I'm not sure about your scheduling here, but it'll be the 15th of November. And we have seminars roughly every month.
Mm-hmm. In New York?
In New York.
Yeah. And is the general public welcome to these?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and... what exactly is Intruders Foundation? Is it a support?
Well, Intruders Foundation is something I founded in 1989, and it was a way in which I needed to start a not-for-profit organization that we could raise some money to try to set up some kind of referral system around the country for people who, I've got letters and people saying, I live in Nome, Alaska. Could you give me a list of people who do this work investigating UFOs and abductions and hypnosis in Nome, Alaska? You know, I only have maybe two or three on the West Coast. You know, so was one of the things, and also, of course, to do research and to publish some material and to try to enlist the support of the psychiatric profession.
Right. Well, Mr. Bud Hopkins, I want to thank you very much for joining us on We Are Not Alone, and I hope we can do this again sometime where we go into some of these technologies that we were were talking about. Would you do that sometime?
Absolutely, yeah.
We've tried before and had problems, but we finally got Mr. Bud Hopkins on tape, and this will be aired the first Saturday of the month of December 2007. I almost said 2008. You believe that?
Mm.
My goodness. At any rate, thank you very much, Mr. Hopkins,
thank
for joining
David.
Us. And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And you can also call the WHFR studios at area code 313-845-9676 or email at whfr@hfcc.edu. And please visit my website at ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. And please watch the Comcast cable version of We Are Not Alone on Channel 20 on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. And I want to thank you for joining us today. And please join us again the first Saturday of each month at 10 a.m. and repeated the next day at 5 p.m. And when we again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And I'd like to wish all of our loyal listeners a safe and happy holiday season.